coming today on Negotiate Your Best Life with Rebecca Zung.
Yeah, and see, here's the thing that people need to get. The people who have achieved success, like you.
And you.
And me. It's not that we've never had obstacles.
Oh, of course. Come on. Yeah.
I mean, we've had big ones.
Absolutely.
Right? So sure. I want you to share, to the extent you're comfortable, what obstacles you've had to overcome, you know, physical, emotional, spiritual, you know, get raw and real with us.
So the big questions are these. How can we navigate and negotiate every situation in our lives, in our career, in our businesses, in our relationships, and even with ourselves for our own self-worth? In other words, what if you could win every time and have no losers? Let's face it, we're not negotiating just to buy a car or for a pay raise. We are negotiating for living in every aspect of our lives. How can we do that powerfully, successfully, and victoriously? Those are the questions, and this podcast will give you the answers. My name is Rebecca Zung, and welcome to the time where you negotiate your best life.
Welcome to today's podcast. I'm Rebecca Zung. Today's guest is a really super cool human. Michael Valdez and I were actually introduced by our mutual business coach, Kelly Townsend. His resume is stellar. He is the senior vice president for global servicing for Realogy, which owns Coldwell Banker, Christie's, Sotheby's. Am I getting that right? Tell me if I'm getting that right, Mike.
Not Christie's.
Thank you.
It's
our
competition.
So I'm going to have you fill in a little bit more of your bio for me. So that we get it right.
That's right. You're going to get me in trouble already.
Yeah, yeah. Sotheby's.
Right. There you go.
And welcome. Thank you so much for being with me here.
Rebecca, such a pleasure. It really has been great getting to know you. And you have been so amazing with your generosity of knowledge and help. And it's been so appreciative. So it's my pleasure to be here on your show and just have a great conversation together.
Thank you. Thank you. So, you know, as many of my listeners know, I recently have changed my format to be Negotiate Your Best Life. And I was really intrigued by you because you have negotiated your best life in so many ways. You've been through so many different things. You've had some career changes and done some all kinds of different things. You've had to live through bad economies and things like that. And you know, where you are now is sitting in a really fantastic position that is super fun. It seems super fun from the outside anyway. You get to travel all over the world and talk to really interesting people. You just launched your own podcast, which I want you to tell us all about. So tell us, first of all, where you are now. What are some of your accomplishments?
So that's going to take a little while, but first of all, thank you again just for the invitation to be here. And I actually love the concept of your podcast of really negotiating your best life, because it's something that we do on a daily basis, right? It's something that we need to make a decision where our next step is. But you know what's so great is that once we realize we have the power of that, it's incredible, because we really do have the power to negotiate any life we want. And so there has been a lot of different trajectories that I've had. So I was in banking for a very long period of time, and then 9/11 came, obviously, and risk management changed, and everything changed in banking. And I think that the lifespan of a banker is probably about a decade before you become a really bad person or just someone that nobody wants to be around.
I'm thinking of Michael Douglas, Wall Street, Wolf of Wall Street, that Leo DiCaprio.
Probably not so bad, but there were probably variables of that. So then, you know, real estate sort of happened quite by accident. And so I was, was buying properties and when I was retiring from banking. And so I bought several properties. I had about a dozen properties that I had bought in Florida at one point. And so
and I'm just
going to
say retiring. For those of you who can't see him, he's still very young. So
I'm not that young anymore, but thank you very much. It's really forgiving lighting, we'll call it. So it was a period, it was basically right place, right time with the banking and, you know, sort of that emergence of the .com and, you know, things like that. So it was good timing, if you will, on that end. But when I started buying real estate just for my own portfolio, you know, as a banker, you start looking at your P&L and then you start realizing that a lot of your costs are coming out of real estate commissions. And so I started thinking, well, I've got the time to go and get a real estate license. How hard can it be?
Yeah.
And literally I went to get a real estate license just for my own purchases and my own portfolio. And so that's how it started.
Yeah, the barrier to entry to become a realtor is not that hard. But then to actually be successful in it, that's where it separates the children
exactly.
from the adults.
And so, but what happened was I had met somebody that owned actually the Sotheby's franchise back in 2005 in Miami and through some mutual friends. And so he was looking for somebody to basically run his operations. And so I was starting to get really enamored in real estate, but I really didn't want to go back to work. And so it was one of the things that he actually was a very charming persuader. And it just was a lot of fun. And so when I went in and I started looking at his business, I said, I have no idea how you're making any money here. And so I came in and really ran with the discipline that I had run with my team at the bank and brought that to the real estate side. And could you even imagine, this was in 2005 and in Miami, in the heat and humidity of Miami.
Hey, I lived down there a long time.
Right.
I went to the University of Miami for law school, by the way.
You did tell me that. That's
right. Yeah.
So you know Miami very well. So imagine being a part of my team and I'm forcing you to put on a suit every day, no tie. And you have to come in to my office by 8 a.m. in Miami in a suit. And because we needed to go and have a strategy meeting every single day.
Every single day.
Every single day.
Nice. So
the idea was that we were the most elite team in Miami. And that's what we became. And if you showed up late, I didn't let you in. If you showed up late, you could just go home.
Are you sure you weren't my bankruptcy professor? Because he was he was the same guy.
For me, it was all about discipline. You know, I always sort of said that success is a math problem, right? So if you want to determine how much money you want to make, especially in real estate, it's easier.
Oh, I love that. So, success is a math problem.
It's what it is.
It's a math equation.
You break it down. Think about it, Rebecca.
Right?
You just break it down.
It's like how much input equals output.
That's it. So you want to make $1 million a year, right? You divide that. So $1 million a year sounds like, oh my God, how am I going to make $1 million a year?
$83,000 a month. Take it from somebody who's done that before.
That doesn't sound as bad, does it?
No, and then you break it down by week, and you break it down by how many clients do you need to have in order to make that, and how much is each client worth to you? All right, well, how many you got to have? I mean, I've done that
it's
math.
It's a math problem. That's it.
Yeah.
And so, but it goes back to what you're just talking about and what your podcast is all about. You're in control of your own destiny.
Right. And you know, this is the one thing that I tell people all the time. And that is the flip side of this is that you can never be a victim then. And so,
absolutely.
So for those of you who are out there that are saying, you know, I can't do it because fill in the blank, because, you know, there's an excuse for everything. Right.
It's my favorite quote from Henry Ford, right?
Oh, that is my favorite quote too. Oh, I know exactly what you're going to say.
I knew what kindred spirits.
That's right.
So,
whether you think
we'll
you can
it.
Or you can't, you're right.
Either way, you're right.
Either way, you're right.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I say that all the time, too, because I went back to law school. I was a single mom with three children, and, you know, I had been a college dropout. I finished college. I went back to law school at night. I had no money. I went 100% on student loans. So I tell people all the time, like, you know, don't tell me you don't have money or that your ex is, you know, not giving you anything or making it hard for you or that you're a victim of, because if you're a victim, then that means that you're basically saying to the universe and to the world that you can't do it.
Well, you've already sort of given yourself that permission, right? So you're not going to try, so you can't sort of fail, right? But you already have failed because you didn't try.
Yeah, and see, here's the thing that people need to get. The people who have achieved success, like you,
and you,
and me, it's not that we've never had obstacles.
Oh, of course, come on.
I mean, we've had big ones, right?
Absolutely.
So, sure. I want you to share, to the extent you're comfortable, what obstacles you've had to overcome, you know, physical, emotional, spiritual, you know, get raw and real with us.
You know, listen, I think you sort of like, you know, you face your demons every day, right? And so it's just a matter of making friends with them. And it's really, you know, you could stay up all night. I mean, I actually, from a really early age, at 24, I was actually diagnosed with colon cancer, and it was a genetic defect that ran in my family on my mother's side. So my maternal grandfather died of it at the age of 33. And my mother was 5 years old, and so I was actually sort of like, so it skipped a generation, and I carried the gene.
Wow.
And so it was, but I felt really fortunate that I was diagnosed early. So I was 24 years old, and I was in my banking career already, and I was working 12, 14 hour days, and I had actually developed an ulcer. And so I sort of like, when I went to the doctor, it's sort of like, you have an ulcer at 24, that's ridiculous. And so, you know, ulcers either caused by bacteria or by stress. And so obviously mine was the latter. And I had such a great physician that he continued to run very thorough tests and found the polyps and sort of said to me, it saved my life. So the ulcer saved my life. But then what happened, and, you know, thank God treatment and everything else was great. And so I've been cancer free for over almost 30 years now. And so it was one of those things that at a very early age, I learned about my mortality. And at a very early age, I just didn't care what anyone else thought. It was one of the greatest gifts that the universe gave me. So it was the idea of you go and just do you and don't hurt anyone else, but don't care about anybody else thinking about what you're doing anyway.
You didn't have to wait till you were 45 like I did.
No, it was good. So we got out of the way early.
Yeah.
And so it was one of those life lessons that came in and it was sort of like, you know, my parents had their own sort of struggles in their marriage and stuff like that as a child. And of course, when you're a youngster, you don't do that math in your head, right? You just sort of think, you know, why isn't dad around? And so it's one of those things that you just figure it out for yourself and sort of learn to protect yourself in a lot of ways. And so that actually was, for me, great, great lessons. And it's sort of like, and I see them as gifts.
Yeah, and you could have seen it as, you know, why me?
It's sort of like
24, yeah. I'm going to die anyway. My grandfather died at 33. I guess, you know, I might as well give up.
You know, And it's sort of like, yeah, and of course you go through the doubts of why me and all of that. I mean, it's only, you're only human, right?
Yeah.
So you, but once you go past that, it's like, okay, what are we going to do with this? Right. And so, well, we're going to go beat it. Right. What else are we going to do with it? And so once you're doing that, then you start feeling like you start feeling like you're invincible, but you start feeling like you want to start accomplishing things. And so that's really sort of what spirit I had within me to just go and do.
Yeah.
And build. Right.
And did that carry you through? I mean, tell me about, so you go into this new career in 2005.
Yeah.
And then the market crashes, like.
I actually have a great story for you on that one.
Okay.
So this was 2008, right? And so the market crashed. Nobody is doing anything. I had a lot of, because my background was in finance, I had a lot of clients that came from the financial world. And so in early 2008, I had a couple that was referred to me. And so they were interested in the St. Regis that was being built in Bell Harbor. And so it was the 6-star hotel. It was supposed to be white glove service.
Yeah,
and blah, blah, blah.
For those of you
so
who don't know interested. Miami, Bell Harbor is a really, really nice area.
Yeah, exactly, right? And so I go and I show them the property and I start, you know, we start looking at what the cost was, and, you know, the developer didn't want to sort of bring his price down. And I said, this is the most ridiculous thing. And so they were asking like $7 million for the property in the middle of the crisis. And so we're out to lunch right across the street at Bell Harbor with the couple afterwards. And so they said, what do you think? And I said, I think that it's incredibly overpriced and you shouldn't pay anywhere near that. And so they said, well, you know, it's sort of like we're prepared to pay the asking price. We just want it. And I sort of said, it doesn't make any sense. And I sort of said, you're not going to get your money back. And it's sort of, you know, your exit strategy is going to be very poor here. And so I said, why don't you allow me to see if I can get you a better price? So we went in and he says, what do you think it's worth? And I said, it's probably worth around $5 million. And so we went in and the developer said, no way, we're not sort of doing anything. And so we come back and blah, blah, blah. So basically I said to, he says they're not budging. And he says, look, I don't want to lose it. I said, you're not going to lose it. There's a crisis. And so he says, you know, I said, I don't want you to buy it. It's not the right thing. And so he's looking at me and he says, you're talking yourself out of a 6-figure commission in the middle of the crisis. I said, because it's not right for you.
I love that.
And so he turns around and he says to me, do you know what I do? And I said, well, I know you're in finance. He says, I own one of the largest hedge funds in New York. And we're starting another hedge fund, which is a vulture fund that we want to do focused on Southern Miami. And so, in Southern Florida. And so a vulture fund was a term that was coming out during the crisis.
Yeah, I remember.
And so a lot of those hedge funds were coming in looking for opportunities of purchasing. And so he says, I never met somebody that was actually so sincere about a purchase for someone else. He hired me on retainer at that lunch table.
Wow.
At $20,000 a month to find him any properties for his hedge fund. The next day I met with his hedge fund analyst. And we went through the parameters of what they were looking for. And so it was the best year I ever had in the business in that crisis.
In that crisis, in the middle of 2008, when everyone else was like choking.
Coming up, more of Rebecca's conversation with Michael Valdez on negotiating career change in the face of struggle.
Maybe it's good to have a fresh start somewhere else, you know?
And guess what? You still have the control of it.
Is there something that's interfering with your happiness or preventing you from achieving your goals? BetterHelp Online Counseling is there for you. You can connect with a professional counselor in a safe, private environment. It's online or it can be through phone, chat, or text. They help you with any issue that you have an issue with, such as depression, stress, anxiety, relationships, sleeping, trauma, basically anything you can think of. If you're unhappy, you can get a new counselor at any time. They're available worldwide. Financial aid is available for those who qualify. Best of all, it's truly affordable. Listeners of Negotiate Your Best Life get 10% off your first month with the discount code BREAKINGFREE. So why not get started today? BetterHelp.com/BREAKINGFREE. Simply fill out the questionnaire and get started. That's BetterHelp.com/BREAKINGFREE. Are you struggling with how to negotiate and win? Maybe you're dealing with a personality that's particularly challenging, like a narcissist or other high-conflict personality, and you're feeling powerless. Make sure to download my free Win My Negotiation cheat sheet at www.winmynegotiation.com.
Take a listen to our archive, where you can hear more conversations about negotiating your best life in the face of struggle, including Negotiating with Your Inner Perfectionist with Bronwyn Saglambini.
Doing the best we can every day, and some days you win and some days you don't, but there seems to be this persistent noise in my head, which seems baked into my personality, which is like, no matter how hard I slay every day, and I slay, most days I slay, it's never enough.
And now we return to today's show.
Because you were being true to yourself.
You know what my husband calls that? He says, clean living. That's clean living.
That's what it is.
You know?
That sure is what it is.
And it's so true. I mean, I often have said that in my law practice, because nobody wants to spend a lot of time or a lot of money with their divorce lawyer. Nobody does. Yeah. I mean, they want to spend as little time and as little money with me as possible. And so my best asset is happy clients who are going to tell everybody that I did a great job for them and send me all their business.
Right.
So I made a decision early on when I was, had my new firm. Here I am. I signed a lease. I've got this paralegal that I'm paying. It's scary. It's really scary. But I just thought, I'm not going to fall prey to that fear mentality, that scarcity mentality, you know, and not do the right thing for the client. You know,
right.
Like if the right thing for the client is to settle this case and not go to trial and make less money on this client, then that's the right thing. And I was just, you know, okay, that's how it's going to go. So I developed this mantra that I would look up at the universe and I would say, do the right thing for this client and the universe will provide for me. And
that's exactly
and so no matter what it was, I would do the right thing for that client and just trust that the universe would provide for me. And I always had, even, you know, now I have a team, thank God. But I mean, I always had way too much work. So I never had a problem, you know, but it's that same kind of thing, you know, it's clean living, you know, if you do the right thing.
It's so true.
And live in an abundance mentality and not a scarcity fear mentality.
That's it. And it's all about doing the right thing, right? And sometimes it's tempting not to, to go and do the short payout, if you will. And so, you know, I always, like when I mentor other people in the industry, it's always the fact of, do not be a transactional broker, in my case with real estate, but be a relationship advisor. You want to be the one that not only handles the first sale, but you want to be the one that handles the sale for the children as well. To really
it's that long-term thinking, that long-term vision. And so many people, so many people
think
of it in terms of short-term. Another friend of mine often calls it lead with a giving hand, you know, and you just lead with a giving hand and without expecting anything in return. And, you know, and I've really tried to live my life that way. And it's always worked out for me, you know.
That's right.
It may not be from that particular person, but the universal will remember in a different way.
It doesn't have to be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
you know, whenever I sort of look at other, sorry to interrupt, but whenever I look at other agents, for example, right, whenever they hand me their card and it says, you know, real estate salesperson or real estate agent or real estate broker, and I sort of said, you know, really read your card. It's not what you are, you know. I said, wouldn't it be so much better just to be an advisor and just to be able to tell somebody, this is, you know, give them their advice. And so it's not like, what are you looking for? I'm looking for a 3-bedroom, 2-bath. Okay, great. What's your budget? It's this. It's sort of like, great. Where do you want to live? Okay, great. I'll see you next Tuesday. No. It's the fact of, why are you moving? What's your family situation?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Right? I mean, well, that's how I teach negotiation, by the way,
sure.
Which is that all people want to feel seen, heard, and know that they matter.
That's right.
Every negotiation is really a battle of the value, right? I want to feel valued. I want to feel valued. I want to feel valued. And that's what's really going on. And so if you want to get what you want, then you better figure out a way to make sure that the other person feels like they got some value out of this thing, or you're not going to be able to resolve the issue.
100%.
So
I love it.
So a lot of our listeners are dealing with divorce. And so What advice can you give to people who are getting ready to sell their house, or they're thinking about divorce, and they're thinking about, I'm sure you must have dealt with divorcing couples in the past.
Of course. Absolutely. Yeah. So, you know, I think you said it before, you really need to start thinking about the people behind the transaction. It is a very painful part of anyone's life. So you have to go through divorce. It's a separation. It's just a parting of ways. And in some ways, you know, it's so emotional for those involved. And so unless you I always sort of love the word emotion, because unless you get rid of the E, which is all the excuses that people have in their head, you don't have motion. So it's the fact that you have to understand what's stopping people with that E in their life, right? Because you won't get motion without it. And so the emotions are something that you can't ignore. You have to embrace. You have to sort of understand where they're coming from. So it's the idea of understanding what their end result is with that purchase. And there's going to be a lot more factors than just the price. It could be that time is more valuable to those parties to really be able to, for their own sort of like health, say, you know, we just need to part. And so it could be that the price is not the most significant thing, that it's just the fact of a quick sale because of X, Y, or Z. You don't know what's going on in their own life.
Yeah. I mean, I, from a divorce attorney's perspective, I always tell people that I don't think it's a good idea for people to remain as co-owners on a piece of real estate, because it gets super, super hairy and difficult down the road, especially when significant others start moving in and now the other person is a half owner and the other new boyfriend or girlfriend are living in there, or you know what happens if there's something catastrophic or it needs a new air conditioning or whatever. It gets very, very hairy. So I always tell people the cleanest way is one buys the other one out, or it's sold and you split the net proceeds. I mean,
that's it.
It's got to be one of those options. And
then if you go back to that role of advisor, then it's also, and you've listened to those parties, then you also can advise them on what's next for them, right? Because everybody has to live somewhere. And so it's the idea of that that journey that you're helping them with.
And sometimes it's hard for them. They don't want to give up that house. I mean, there's an emotional factor with houses a lot of times.
100%.
I mean, it's not just a place that they've lived. It's not just an asset. It's not the same as a bank account. It's there, you know, it's where the kids were born, or
it's the memories.
Yeah. I mean, or maybe they're close to the neighbors, or they like the area or something like that. I mean, there's a lot of things involved.
Yeah. So, and you can't split the memories.
No, you can't. But, you know, I often tell people that you're creating new ones and it's a new chapter in your life. And maybe sometimes.
That's absolutely true.
Maybe sometimes it's not good to have that old energy there, you know? I mean, maybe it's good to have a fresh start somewhere else, you know?
And guess what? You still have the control of it.
Yeah. So
you have the control of negotiating that new life.
Absolutely. Just like what we talked about in the beginning here, right?
Sure. Absolutely.
So you have a new podcast coming out. Or I think the first episode is actually today, but this podcast will come out in a few weeks. So by the time this podcast goes live, you will have had a few episodes out. So tell us all about it.
Sure. And so I think it's called the Global Luxury Real Estate Mastermind with Michael Valdez. And the idea is to have conversations with people around the world. As you mentioned, I travel 200 days a year. I travel about 250,000 miles, and about 80 to 85% of that is international. So I am always on a plane, and the...
I won't ask what that does to your personal life. You don't have to share that.
But the globe is basically the best classroom ever. And, you know, you learn everything. You learn different cultures. You learn, you know, different things around the world. And so for me, it was a way to sort of bring different viewpoints of the world to a listener for my podcast. So I had some great interviews already in the can from obviously New York, London. I just got back from St. Bart's. I had a good friend of mine who is a huge developer in Europe who happened to be there as well. And so we had a great conversation. I was in China in December for the Luxury Property Show. Had a few interviews that I had done there. I was a speaker at one of our affiliates' larger events for 5,000 of their brokers. And so I have been blessed with the opportunity to have all these different venues. And I think when we start talking about global luxury, there's so many viewpoints of how that interpretation can be done. And so in some cases, we talk about luxury as time, and really the idea of capturing time back. And when you do, that's the greatest luxury of all, because that's what's the greatest commodity that's priceless.
That's interesting, because, you know, in the divorce world, I always say there's a price for freedom, and it's different for every person. It's the same kind of thing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so we start talking with designers, with agents, with teams, with managers, with developers, with marketing specialists. We start talking to consumers, actually. We start talking about different people that have a different viewpoint on the same topic. And so far it's been an interesting conversation, because it's not fully real estate related. It's not, so nobody is 100% anything, right? And so so everybody has other interests and other things. And, you know, I have a great friend of mine who is the owner of one of our affiliates in Turks and Caicos. And his focus is on celebrity clients. And he just sold Bruce Willis's house for $38 million. He's got Donna Karan's house for $42 million. But he's got a garage band, and he plays in different sort of places throughout the islands, and it's great. And he's had about 5 or 7 albums out already. It's amazing.
That's super cool. Okay, so now I have to ask, what's the back of the business card for you? What's your version of the Garage Band?
Wow, that is a great question. So did I mention I traveled 200 days a year? You know, I think it's going to be a really sad answer. But at this point in my life, what I think that is my responsibility because of the successes that the universe has been very kind in giving me is to give back. And the idea of philanthropy and mentorship is quite important to me. And so I do mentor quite a lot, and that's also part of the reason of the podcast is to be able to try to reach a wider audience and to really try to get a greater message out to a greater number of people.
Yeah.
So that really is it for me.
Oh, well, that's not a nothing. That's a huge thing. So where can people find out more about Michael?
So, well, you can do that on the podcast. You can Google me. There's a lot of stuff that I do.
Well,
I do
if they Google you, Michael Valdez with an S on the end, not a Z.
With an S, yes. Correct. Yes. And so I do a lot of public speaking around the world. And so it's, you can find me. You can find me.
So tell us the name of your podcast so we can find it.
Sure. It's the Global Luxury Real Estate Mastermind with Michael Valdez.
All right. Thank you so much, Michael. This has been
Rebecca,
really great.
Thank you.
Thanks for stopping by and listening to this episode of Negotiate Your Best Life. I'm Rebecca Zung. Check back next Monday for more inspirational pearls of wisdom. And if you enjoyed today's podcast, I'd love if you would give it a 5-star rating and tell me what you liked in a review on iTunes. Also, be sure to grab your winning negotiation cheat sheet at winmynegotiation.com. And remember, today is a perfect day to start negotiating your best life.